Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the credit crisis right after this. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. This surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity, from bank deposits to medical visits, has produced greater efficiency and security, all right, but it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Now, our federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American, and that's according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. Now, closer to home, our state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. And a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state, New York, and its state agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems. Those 1,776 separate data systems contain 10,799 categories of information about New York residents. And every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Now, information about you and about me is gained from 63 sources, and this information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and very logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how government, banking, insurance, business, and industry obtains all of this information about you? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? What do they want it for? Well, knowing how this information is being gathered and what information is being stored and what information you want to keep personal and private actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, if you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Just ask for our free general law CD package. And let me tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and just as private as you want to be. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website and send us an email. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, on the email machine. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the credit crisis. Now, we started off with Franklin Sanders, and I switched over now to the privateer last few minutes. The privateer comes out of Australia. It's about $130 a year, American, $180 Australian, worth every penny of it. If this guy charged $500 a year, it would be well worth it, because this guy is a real teacher. Unusual in these newsletter formats. Normally, they're just economists, and they use economist lingo, and you can't understand half of what they tell you. This guy puts it in plain language, and he puts it in a geostrategic, geopolitical format so that you can grasp the significance of what's going on in the economic downturn. Now, I started off last time, and I showed you what the worldwide industrial shutdown was all about, and the world's factories are becoming silent. Now, listen to paragraph 3. It says the ISM, now that's your Purchasing Managers Index, the ISM Purchasing Managers Gauge of new orders for all U.S. factories fell to a mere 27, the lowest since 1980 from 32 the prior month. The current U.S. production measure fell to 31 from 34, and the total U.S. economy shrank 0.5% of GDP in the third quarter, with business spending on new equipment and software declining at a 5.7% rate. Now, that's pretty significant. Do you know how much 0.5% for 1 month is? Well, that's 6% a year. 6% a year. Now, normally when your GDP is contracting in a recession, it contracts by 0.5% would be a big contraction for the entire year. That's 0.5%. That's 0.5% in 1 month. Unheard of. Didn't see that in the last Great Depression. We're beginning to see numbers coming out of this economic crisis that we didn't see in the 1930s. I mentioned that to you on commodities. Commodities have already fallen 20 percentage points further than they did in the entire 1930s depression. And hell, we're not at the bottom of it yet. We're just getting started. Now, in the background hovers the great U.S. deflation, and the United States is leading the worldwide parade. And this can be seen from the fact that the debt deflation has carved $7 trillion from U.S. stocks and another $6 trillion from U.S. home equity. Now, that's a direct financial loss of wealth totaling $13 trillion, leaving many U.S. prices way too high. Now, the prices are too high to support that kind of a price structure. So we've already lost $13 trillion, And that's just in 2008. And listen, boys and girls, we haven't got started yet. 2009 is going to be worse than 2008. That's what they're all predicting. And then the numbers that I'm seeing there would lead me to believe that's probably even an understatement. This depression is going to be a real mind-boggler. And you know what the average American's thinking? Hey, have we reached the bottom yet? Sounds like a bunch of kids, you know, sitting in the back seat of the car. Are we there yet, Daddy? Are we there yet, Daddy? Are we there yet, Daddy? No, we're not there yet, child. And we're not likely to get there in 2009 either. Now, the U.S. Commerce Department said that U.S. personal consumption spending after adjusting for inflation fell at an annual rate of 2.7%. That's the biggest fall since the second quarter of 1980. And the desperation in U.S. governing circles is palpable. The federal government committed an additional $800 billion to two new loan programs on November the 25th, bringing its cumulative commitments to financial rescue initiatives to a staggering $8.5 trillion, according to Bloomberg. Now, this just started since last July. Now, remember, go back to July. We hadn't come to the Summer Olympics yet. Then in August, we came to the Summer Olympics, and that was 1 year from August of 2007 in our downturn. In December of 2007, we entered recession. Now, here we are in December of 2008, 1 year later, 1 year after we have entered recession, and we have spent $8 trillion, $8.5 trillion, trying to revive this economy. Hey, that's mind-boggling. $13 trillion loss and $8.5 trillion is being spent to revive this dead carcass. Page 2. Crude steel production for the 66 countries reporting to the World Steel Association was 100 million metric tons in October. That's 12% lower than October of last year, 7% lower than September of 2008. The declines are particularly severe in China, down 17% from last October, and in Russia, down 27%. Some 90 million tons, or 2 months' worth of imports of iron ore, are now stockpiled in Chinese ports due to a sudden collapse in demand by Chinese steel mills. Scrap steel used by these steel mills recently fell to about $90 per gross ton after having traded at about $550 in July. So you go back to July, scrap steel selling at $550. Today it's selling for $90. Hey, is that a change? Now, this data is as clear an indication of a deep global recession depression as anyone would want. When both price and volumes collapse to this extent, they signal drastic economic changes ahead. Further, since the steel slump is global, the situation is global. The worldwide industrial slowdown will rally or really start after the end of the holiday season. In global political terms, this situation is explosive. Historically, it is the territory of sudden national debt moratoriums by debtor nations which cannot service their debts. It is also the political territory of out-of-the-blue currency revolutions in which a currency is replaced by a brand new one, leaving all the uncertified holders of the old currency swinging in the breeze. So get ready for a change in the currency. I don't know if it's going to be the dollar to the Amero or something else, but wherever you live in the world, be attuned to the fact that if your country could be Australia, a debtor nation, unable to pay its debts, may just change your currency in the morning. Here's another kicker. In Argentina, the Argentine government just came in and confiscated everybody's 401ks and Krogan retirement programs. And that's what they're talking about doing here in the halls of Congress right now. Testimony has been taken about taking over all the private retirement programs and lumping them together under a new federal agency. Boy, you talk about a windfall profits tax now. I mean, we're talking about trillions of dollars that's stored in banks in these savings accounts for people's retirement. Trillions of dollars, and the government's on the verge of confiscating it. This is what they did with gold back in the 1930s. Now, I don't think they're going to confiscate gold this time around, but I think they're going to confiscate your retirement program. Of course, they'll do it in the national interest, and there's a good reason for doing that. You see, Americans aren't saving enough. And they have moved off of the fixed pension programs that companies were offering, and they've moved now to the personal private retirement programs, such as 401s. And Americans are saving less than half of what they need to save in order to retire. So if you're thinking about retirement, put it out of your mind. That isn't going to happen. That ain't going to happen. And if you've got a job, the last thing you want to do is give it up. You better stay right there and make every dollar you can. And you better hang on to every dollar you can in the form of seeds and food and clothes and shelter and debt reduction. Whatever you can. You're getting a late start, but starting late is better than not starting at all. Now listen to this. This data now is a clear indication of a deep global recession depression as anyone could want. When both price and volumes collapse to this level, they signal drastic economic changes ahead. Let me underline that. They signal drastic economic changes ahead, changes that you and I can't even imagine are coming. This is going to be a mind boggler. Now, there's a thing called deleveraging. That means you're paying off your debts. Now, every bit of leverage is being pulled. So said Robert G. Smith. He's the chairman of Smith Affiliated Capital. It's an investment management firm. The brokerage firms, he says, are pulling in their lines, and so are the banks. And at the same time, there's nobody putting 1 cent of new capital into positions. Over-leveraged is the purest description of the U.S. financial system today. Friedman Billings of Ramsey analyst Paul Miller wrote in his report last week. He said, at 8 of the largest U.S. financial institutions, tangible equity equals 3.4% of assets, which implies a 29 times leverage. 3.4% in assets. The rest of it's borrowed. In a credit contraction, being in debt can be terrible. In a credit deflation, which is stalking the world today, being in debt can be deadly. As credit deflates, it also contracts the total volume of credit money in circulation, and that sends the deeply indebted or over-leveraged into a near frenzy to gain liquidity, selling everything in sight to gain cash to repay their debts. Now, that's why you see a fall in prices, especially in commodities. If you're running a hedge fund, and let's say you've got $1 billion in your hedge fund put in by your investors, and you've bought copper, and you bought the copper when it was $2 a pound, and now it's $3.20. All of a sudden, your investors say, we want our money back, and you have to sell some of that copper at $3.20 in order to pay your investors. Those are the investors that get out at the top. As those investors get out at the top, the price of copper drops because you and a lot of other guys are selling copper, so it goes down to $3. Other investors, seeing the price of copper drop to $3, say, cash me out. You have to sell more copper at $3 in order to get the money now to buy these guys up. This, in turn, inflates the amount of copper that's out there in the physical marketplace and drops the price to $2.75, and then $2.50, and then $2.25, and then $1.75, and the last time I saw a number, it was $1.61. So what's happening here is deleveraging is putting these products on the market for sale. Take a look at scrap steel. Let's suppose you had 10 tons of scrap steel and you wanted to sell it. Well, the steel makers around the world are pulling in their horns. They're not making as much steel because there's not as much demand for it. So as a result, you're sitting there with your $90. Now, I'm a buyer of steel. Do I want to buy your steel at $90? Not really. I've probably got a big pile of it sitting out here that I already paid $500 for back in July. And now when I go to sell it, I'm going to get something more than $90, but, you know, maybe it's $200. So I'm taking it in the shorts. You know, I was buying the stuff at $550, and now I'm selling it for $2. I'm taking a $300 hit every time I sell a ton of this scrap steel. Well, now either I've got enough money in the bank to cover that difference, called liquidity, or I don't. And if I don't, maybe I'm out of business. Now, that kind of contraction is going on all over the world. Now, let's suppose you're working for this scrap company over here. Do we need you? What do we need you for? We don't want to buy any more scrap steel. So this puts everybody into lockdown. So everybody starts thinking about, oh, my God, I guess I better start pulling in my horns, which means I've got to lay off more people, and I'm only going to do the bare bones essentials. Now, one of the debtors, or once the debtors have gained some cash and used it to repay some debt, they have now deleveraged, but they also deflated the credit money system even further. This is fatal to any credit money-based economy. That's what our world economy is based on, credit money. We just create it right out of the air, lend it into circulation. Any financial system with its top 8 financial institutions leveraged up to 29 times over tangible equity is an accident waiting to happen. Think of an individual with $100,000 in assets and $3 million in debt. $100,000 in assets and you got $300,000 in debt. You're upside down. That's what it boils down to. And that's where these major corporations like General Motors and Chrysler and Ford are located. They're all leveraged out there into the stratosphere. They've got debt that they can't service. Now that they're not selling as many cars, they don't have as much cash flow, not enough income, not enough profit. They can't service their debt. Now, that's what's coming down around the world. Now, let's take a look at deleveraging as an ongoing U.S. project. Any financial system with its top 8 financial institutions leveraged out to 29 times is an accident waiting to happen. Now, let's take a look at what happened historically. The place is, of course, the United States, and the data is from the statistical history of the United States. Real wages, pay attention now, real wages for the average working man tripled, went up 300%, three times, between 1850 and 1913. So in that 63-year period, real purchasing power and wages went up three times. Now today, the average Joe Sixpack is making $17.58 an hour. And so over 63 years, if your wages went from 1758 times three, they would go up to $52.74 an hour, and all at the same time cause no inflation whatsoever. Prices did not go up in that same period of time. Now think about that. If you put $100 in the bank in 1865, $100, in 1900 you could go back to the bank and pick up your $100, and it would have $102 worth of purchasing power. It actually picked up 2% in purchasing power, irrespective of the interest paid to you over that 35-year period. And your wages went up 3 times. That's the historical fact. Now, that's what happens when you practice the Ten Commandments. That's what happens when you practice property instead of profit. That's what happens when you practice increase instead of income. That's what happens when you practice the Ten Commandments in place of the Ten Planks. Now, the United States gross domestic product increased over 500%, averaging 4.3% annual growth from 1870 to 1913. This highly productive era was accompanied by steadily falling consumer prices. From 1800 to 1913, there was an overall 30% reduction in the consumer price index from 43 to 30. Now, modern economists stand dumbfounded before these facts, but the Gilded Epoch, which lasted from about 1870 to 1910, has often been called the Second American Industrial Revolution. U.S. wholesale prices, for instance, increased by an average of only 0.1% between 1879 and 1913, and the long-term stability of the late 19th century was not, of course, due to U.S. government measures. It was the semi-automatic effect of the international gold standard. There was no Federal Reserve, and the U.S. income tax amendment to the Constitution had not been enacted yet. Gold and silver coinage was there, and Americans had the most productive period ever as living standards climbed. Now, if you want to return to that, you return to the Ten Commandments and the economic system, gold and silver. What we really should be doing today is abolishing the Federal Reserve and let those banks go to hell in a handbasket. They caused you the crisis to start with. I've mentioned this before. You go to the whorehouse and you pick up a dose of clap. And here you are sitting here with your diseased organ. And I say to you, well, you need a cure for your gonorrhea, so why don't you go back to the whorehouse? And that's exactly what we're doing today. You've got bankers over here that have run their banks right into the ground, bankrupt. Bankrupt. There's a bank going bankrupt every week right now. It's called the Friday Night Massacre. And there's 13 or 14 banks now that have gone upside down over the past 2 or 3 months, about one a week. And they got 170 of them on the watch list. And these bankers who cannot manage money and have run their banks into bankruptcy are the very people that you're hiring and putting into office. Your new Secretary of the Treasury is Robert Rubin. I mean, come on, guys. Don't you think it's about time we woke up and spilled some coffee? Rub the sleep out of your eyes here and let's wake up. I'm not going to change any of this, and I don't propose or suspect that you're going to change it either, but I got to sit here and shake my head and say, have you people taken leave of your senses? And you're going to stay in that system. You want to stay there and pay that 16% Social Security and 17% income tax to pay these clowns to do more of what they've already done to cause the economic collapse that you've already witnessed? And you're going to do more of the same? You want more debt, more usury, and more worthless paper, and that's going to solve your problem? Boys and girls, I showed you last time that your interest, your debt, and your commercial paper, that is your paper fiat currency over here, is the cause of your economic crisis. It's not going to be the solution to it. Gold and silver, abandonment of usury and interest, and the abandonment of banks and the banking system, and going back to gold and silver coin is the solution. That's what's always paid us in spades in the past, and I suspect that it'll pay us in spades again. Now here's more on another time in the same place. Now compare the economic circumstances in the United States as they were before World War I with the circumstances after the end of World War II, and it's easy to observe that U.S. living standards reached their apogee about 1960, and that it has been all downhill from there. The downhill slide in U.S. living standards was invisible to most Americans because numerically their monetary incomes increased. You're making more and more dollars that buy less and less. That's the mystery of it. The 1970s tore that disguise apart as U.S. consumer prices, before the official lies came into play, climbed at an annual rate of around 14%, and in some private estimates as high as 18 to 20% in the latter part of the decade. But in fact, the U.S. economy had been caught by a credit expansion that had lasted too long and which had spilled over into climbing consumer prices. Since the 1970s, the United States has been a serial credit expander, and one credit expansion followed another in waves. The last one was launched by Alan Greenspan, 1% official interest rates in 2003 and 2004. That one blew up the huge U.S. real estate bubble. Now the United States is back again at 1% official interest rates with the Bernanke Fed. And on December the 16th, official rates will surely go below 1%. And clearly, this is the old U.S. policy prescription, which claims that all that is required to restart another credit expansion is to lower official rates far enough. Well, now that's what they're doing. That's what they have done. It's what they're going to continue to do. Now, Here's the new arrival, an internal U.S. deflation. This time, there is another huge economic feature inside the U.S. economy and the U.S. Financial system. It is a vast internal U.S. deflation, which has so far taken $13 trillion out of the U.S. system, made up of about $7 trillion fall in the U.S. stock market and $6 trillion in real estate values. It is this climbing wave of internal deflation, which the Bernanke Fed and the Treasury see rolling towards them. Both are trying to stop it in its tracks by sending a huge $8.5 trillion of freshly created funding and official guarantees to do battle with it. But their real problem is that only about $2.3 trillion in new funds and guarantees have been delivered so far, and they have had no effect whatsoever, as the further falls in the U.S. stock market and real estate demonstrate so clearly. So while they've been out here spending all this money, doing all these things, jumping up and down, pawing the ground, biting the bushes, stirring up a lot of hate and discontent and dust in the process, it's done just exactly nothing. Zero. Now, you're on the hook for $8.5 trillion, joint and severally, with 300 million other Americans, and you've accomplished exactly zero. You blew $8.5 trillion in the process and bought nothing. And I would suspect you're going to spend a lot of $8 trillion checks and buy just exactly nothing. And that's because all of this inflation is the problem. It's not the solution. So they're proposing that we solve our problem. I mean, it's like having your house on fire and you're going to fight it with a hose filled with gasoline. Okay, well, you can put more gasoline on the fire, but I don't think it's going to put the fire out. Putting more money into the economy isn't going to solve your problem. Putting more money into General Motors isn't going to solve their problem. General Motors is insolvent. General Motors has got a debt structure that they can't service. It didn't make any difference how many cars they make or how good their product is. Their fiat currency debt and interest program has buried them. There's no saving General Motors. No saving Ford, no saving Chrysler. I don't care how much money you put into them. Now, you already tested that with AIG. And the United States government, you taxpayers out there, you paid $85 billion for an insurance company that was bankrupt. Why in the hell would anybody in his right mind pay $85 billion for a company that's broke so that you could buy $10 trillion worth of liabilities? I don't think I need to do that. I used to be in the real estate business in Oakland, California, and there was a building out at 23rd Avenue and 23rd Street. And then the guy said to me, he said, if you will take this building over, we'll give it to you free. But we need somebody that can come in here and take this building over and run it, make it pay, and service the debt. And I suppose the building was probably worth, you know, if it was located anyplace else, might have been worth $100,000 at the time. It was a 23-unit building. But I'm just guessing, you know, that those units are probably worth, you know, $5,000 a piece. And so I declined to take the building because I didn't think I could make that thing run even if you gave it to me. But why would anybody in his right mind pay $100,000 for a building that's losing money? Why would anybody in the United States government, you or me or anybody else, pay $85 billion for a company that's already defunct? And not only is it already defunct, but they've got $10 trillion worth of liabilities. So when you buy them, what you're doing is you're paying $85 billion for $10 trillion worth of liabilities. Now, if that's the kind of education you people are getting out here in college, let me tell you that you're wasting your money. I mean, your people are paying money, you know, good money for an education, and they're teaching you this kind of crap. You don't need to pay $85 billion for a defunct company and just let the thing go upside down, go in there and take it over, free, and let somebody else take the $10 trillion worth of liabilities. Now, let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. It's georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Remember, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements and recommendations that we give, they don't mean that our authors and publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. We should all keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. And these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, before I go any further, I should give you the name and number here. This guy's name is William Buckler, B-U-C-K-L-E-R. They're located at Post Office Box 2004 in Noosa, N-O-O-S-A, Heads, H-E-A-D-S, Queensland, 4567, Australia. The publisher is Bill Buckler, P.O. Box 2004, Noosa, Heads, Queensland, 4567, Australia. Now, if you're modern and up-to-date, you can just get online and go to www.the-privateer.com. That is www.the-privateer.com. Privateer.com. Don't forget the hyphen between the V and the privateer. Or you can go to their email. It's captain, C-A-P-T, at the-privateer.com. They've also got a phone, so why don't you put their phone number down at 617-5471-1960. And so that's 617-5471-1960. Now, this is called the Privateer. This is issue number 618. $180 a year in Australian money, in U.S. funds. I think that's about $130. Call them and ask them what the number is. I would put this one right at the top of the list if you're a newcomer, and you've never subscribed to a economics newsletter before, like the McIlvaney Report or the Cook Report or the International Forecaster or the Money Changer or Dr. Gary North, people like that. All of them are good. I'm not knocking North or McIlvaney or any of those guys. They're all great guys, and they're all telling you the straight skinny that you can't get there from here. That's the bottom line. So if you're an average Joe Sixpack American and you're sitting there saying, well, I'm just waiting for the recession to end and things are going to be all right, the recession isn't going to end and things are not going to be all right. This is another Great Depression. This is what we've been waiting for, preparing for, and planning for over the past 30 years. The thing that surprises me is that it lasted this long. I never would have thought that you could get from the 1971 decoupling of gold, but that thing could last for 35 or more years. I didn't believe it. But here we are 35 years later, and it's just collapsing right around our ears right now. Now, Bill Buckler goes on. He said, if only a year ago the privateer had reported on the facts analyzed in this and recent past issues, no one would have believed us. Now, look what is now being reported on the financial and economic front pages every day. A forecast annual U.S. federal budget deficit of more than $2 trillion. A Fed balance sheet ballooning from $900 billion to $2.2 trillion to a forecasted $3 trillion, and all of it in 90 days. 90 days. That's what you're witnessing here. That is unprecedented. That is so far beyond anything that occurred back in the 1930s, even adjusted for inflation. The free fall of the world's economy. Do you understand that the steel production worldwide is off 40%? In fact, it's almost 50. It was down 47%. Steel now is a barometer of future economic activity. You can expect next year that you will have 40% less economic activity next year. You're going to have 40% less steel, 40% fewer cars, 40% fewer dishwashers and washers and dryers. That's what the steel industry is forecasting. It's a barometer of future economic activity. A 40% cut. Boys and girls, we never saw that in 1 year before. Never in history have we seen it. These are breathtaking events. I use the term breathtaking as I read these numbers. And the only place that you get an accurate forecast, an accurate record, an accurate report of what the hell's going on, you're not getting it from the lying government bureaucracy. They're lying to you every day. And the only place you can get that is from these newsletters. Mainstream media doesn't have it. You're not going to get this from Brian Williams. Hell, they can't even add. Those poor clowns have all been to college. They've all got degrees. I was watching McNeil Lair the other night. And, you know, David Brooks, the guy that's on there every Friday night, he's kind of a pundit, political pundit. And he was asked the question, Lair asked him, he said, well, what do you make of this economic bailout? And Brooks, who is a conservative, he works for the New York Times, but he's a conservative writer, he said, well, if it works, but the numbers are staggering. And he said, I can only hope that it's going to work because the numbers are so huge. And then he went on to say, no, I'm not an economist, but I can only hope that it works. Boys and girls, there isn't any reason to believe that this economic stimulus package is going to work. None. Zero. They have never worked in the past. They are not working today. What in the hell makes you think they're going to work in the future? That is the classic definition of insanity. When you do the same thing that didn't work in the past, expecting a different outcome, it's preposterous on its face. Now, we can expect inflation. We can expect hyperinflation. We can expect a long duration. We can expect a further collapse in housing prices. Now, so far, they're down about 40%. And that's about where they were predicted. Bob Chapman said here about 2 or 3 years ago, he said he thought housing would be off 40%. Hell, it's off 40%. It's still in free fall. We haven't got a clue as to where it's going to bottom out. In the last depression, it was 50%. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if this one goes down 60, 70, or 80%. Now, the stock market lost 89% of its value from 1929 to 32. 89%. And see how much that is. If we take 14,000 times 0.89, that would be 12,460 points. And so if you take 14,000 and you take 12,460 points off of that, you'd be at 1540. That's what we saw predicted here by Franklin Sanders. He said, you can expect the stock market to bottom out around 1500. Now, I'm not a prophet, and I don't think Sanders is either. We don't know if this thing's going to bottom out at 1500 or 2000 or 3 or 4000. But my God, boys and girls, the stock market, when it collapsed in 1929 to 32, didn't recover its old level until 1954. So if this thing at this point in time follows the 1929 to 32 model, it'll be, let's see, we're talking about 2011 or 12, 22, 30, be about 2032 before it recovers its 14,000 level. Meanwhile, you will have suffered all of this inflation. There isn't any way in God's green earth that you're ever going to get your money back investing for the long haul in the stock or bond markets, either or. And that's because of inflation. Inflation is going to eat our lunch. It's going to wipe us out. And that's why in the last program I said, you got to plan for inflation. Not just inflation, but hyperinflation. Inflation's eating your lunch. Now, what's happened here is that when I was a kid, just take us back to about 1950, I can remember gasoline selling for 30 cents a gallon, and I was making about $50 a month delivering newspapers, but $1.75 was about average wage, $1.75 an hour in 1950, and you were doing fine. Today, that $1.75 translates into $17.50, or about 10 times more. You're making 10 times more today than you were then. But prices for everything has gone up more than 10 times. Not everything, but most things. Automobiles. Let's take a look at an automobile. In 1950, you could buy a brand new Chevrolet or Ford automobile for $1,200, $1,400. Today, that same car costs you, $20,000. In 1955, you could buy a brand new Chevrolet two-door, six-cylinder, black and white hardtop sedan for about $2,500. Today, that same car probably costs you $20,000 or thereabouts. So while prices have gone up, John Deere tractor, 1947 was about $3,000. Today, they're $60,000, $80,000. Better machines, I don't deny. Bigger, heavier, better machines. But prices are lower today than they were back in the 1940s. And when you adjust it for inflation, it's even worse. All right, so now with that in mind, let's get our heads on straight and come back down to earth here. If you're thinking about retirement, put it out of your mind. It ain't going to happen. I'll give you a report here on retirement next week, and we'll take a look at this thing of retirement. Americans don't have enough money. They're not even saving enough money. They're only saving half enough money to fund their retirements. Most Americans have $29,000 in their retirement accounts. My God, that isn't even enough for 1 year. The average median income here in the United States now is about $45,000 a year, boys and girls. Half the people make over that, half the people make under that. So if you're going to live at the $45,000 median level income, and you're going to live for 17 years, let's take 17 times $45,000. You've got to have $765,000. You plumbers and carpenters and electricians, you tradespeople, for you to retire at age 65 and live 17 years, that would be 75, 80, 82, 83 years old. On average, you got to have $765,000 in your retirement account today in order for you to retire today. Here's what's worse. The $765,000 that you got in the bank is losing value at the rate of 15% per year right now. That's what the inflation rate is. Can you see how that's going to eat you alive? Your $765,000, if you had it in the bank today, times 0.15, you lose $114,750 worth of purchasing power in the first year. Just evaporates, like the value of your house, just evaporated over the last year. The value of your stocks, the value of your 401k, just evaporated. There's where your retirement's going. That's why I said, you people out there, if you're retired, start looking for work. If you're thinking about retirement, put it out of your minds. It ain't going to happen. Wake up. Let's start smelling some coffee. Now here's the prescription. The present situation in which the United States has placed itself today is not unknown to political and economic history. The former British Empire had placed itself in a near similar position during the Crimean War, when it challenged Russia in the Black Sea. In the end, saner minds in Britain prevailed. A peace was entered into with Russia, and Great Britain withdrew. With British finances in an unholy mess, the prescriptions of the British classical economists were followed. The British discount rate was pushed much higher, and a fierce internal economic contraction followed inside the economy. That's fierce internal contraction is known as a depression, a financial depression followed. That was the recipe which provided the economic cure. The higher discount rate caused an inflow of foreign funds. The internal economic contraction released British economic goods for export. The balance of trade swung from deficit into surplus. Only 3 years later, the British economy again had low market rates of interest freely funded by internal business and private savings. Britain was again the foremost economy in the world with an annual current account surplus of 4.6% of gross domestic product, GDP. They were expanding at the rate of 4.6%. And I just reported to you, the November number was a minus 6%. The U.S. economy is contracting at 6% a year right now as I speak. Now, there is a prescription here. I mean, if we wanted to solve the problem, we could do it. But you're not going to solve the problem with the bankers in control. The bankers have already shown you they caused the problem. And so here's what the United States could do. Economically, there is no reason in the world why the U.S. could not follow a similar policy that the British did. To do it would require the U.S. military withdrawal from Iraq and Afghanistan and from NATO. Then, the United States would also require cutting the current Pentagon budget by at least half. That and only that would free up the internal U.S. financial resources to reinvest in the internal civil and private U.S. economy, and higher, not lower, U.S. interest rates would ignite that investment. Now, what they're proposing here is that we print more money. Wealth does not come from printing more money. Wealth comes from the raw materials that come out of the ground. Now, let me show you how this economy used to work. The U.S. economy used to work on gold and silver coin. And where did the gold come from? It came from the citizens who went out and worked in gold mines and mined the gold out of the ground. They went out and expended their labor and produced gold. Other people went out and expended their labor and produced lumber. Other people went out and expended their labor and produced steel. Then somebody woke up one day and said, no, let's not go out and work to produce money, gold and silver. Let's just print it. Well, that's a wonderful idea for the guy that's got the printing franchise. I love it. I wish I had it. So the bankers got rich printing the money so that they could go out and buy the lumber and the steel and all the other commodities out there. Hell of a great idea. Then they passed that on to the rest of us, and they called it credit. So they give you a credit card so you can just go out into the marketplace and just buy all this stuff. Now, that's great. That's great. But then comes payback. And when you get to payback, that's not so great, and that's where we're at today. We're to the point of payback, and we've got the money. Well, up in Northern California, there was a creek up there called Wages Creek. It's still called Wages Creek, and there's gold in it. My granddad said you could go up on Wages Creek, and you could pan for gold up there, and you could make about a dollar a day, which in 1900 was about wages. You could work at the Union Lumber Company in Fort Bragg, California, and you could make about a dollar a day, pulling lumber on the green chain or working in the woods, cutting trees or whatever you were doing. Wages, unskilled common labor, about a dollar a day. So let's suppose that you're up here and you're panning for gold and you're getting a dollar a day. But as the economy grows, all of a sudden there's a shortage of boards. And so it's true, your Confederates, they're working down in the sawmill for a dollar a day. But now the lumber company has to pay higher wages to attract more labor so that they can produce more boards, so that they can sell more boards into an expanding economy, which is demanding more boards because the prices are going up for lumber. That's the marketplace, the free marketplace. So now they're paying $1.10 down at the lumber mill, but you can still only get a dollar out of the ground. You can still only get a dollar a day working in the creek. So you leave the creek and you go down to the lumber mill and you produce boards. So you're working away down here, and pretty soon we've produced enough boards to satisfy demand. Now we're producing boards that more than satisfy demand. Now there's a glut of boards on the market. And because of this glut of lumber on the market, the price goes down. And as the price goes down, there's a contraction. And so the lumber mill says we're not going to pay $1.10 a day anymore. We're only going to pay 90 cents. Well, now if you can only make 90 cents in the sawmill, and you can make a dollar up on Wages Creek, you leave the mill and you go back up to the creek and you start panning for gold again. And this is called the free marketplace. It's called supply and demand. That's what works. That's the natural process that was set in motion by the Ten Commandments and God out at Mount Sinai. And there's an economic formula to follow. That is, use gold and silver. Don't use unjust weights and balances. Don't engage in debt and don't practice usury and interest. You follow that program, and you will have wealth and prosperity for the largest number of people in the broadest spectrum of the economy. That's what happened when we did it from 1865 to 1910. And then somebody woke up and said, what we need is a central bank. Well, now we got our central bank. Now, do you see what happened in 1930? We got a depression. Do you see what's happening now in 2008? We got another depression. And that's the natural results. Now, the solution is don't do anything. Keep a Johansa offa. If you keep a Johansa offa, the economy will straighten itself out. General Motors will go into the dustbin of history. But out of that, there will come new companies. New companies that can compete. New companies that can produce automobiles that people want and want to pay for. They'll produce a profit. And if you'll get off of this Federal Reserve kick, and if you'll get off of usury and interest, and listen, if the rest of the country won't do it, you just do it with you and your own family. This Ten Commandment model does not depend upon us going to Washington and marching on Congress and getting Congress to enact some laws. Hell, Congress is the problem, not the solution. The solution is right here with individuals and families, just you and your family. Get off of debt, get off of interest and usury, and get off of paper money. There's plenty of gold and silver out there. Let's go back and go to work. And as a result of that, there's just great opportunities. In my business school, the first thing I tell students when they come in here, I say, business and business opportunity is like rain. It's everywhere. And if there isn't any out there, go turn on the faucet and get under it. Rain. Business opportunity is just like rain. It's everywhere. Now, it isn't in the same places. Now, buying General Motors stock and leveraging and one thing and another, stocks and bonds, that's not where the profit is for the future. That's not where the money's at. That's not where the economy's gone. We've been there, done that. It all failed. Now, gold and silver is where it's at. Wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil is where it's at. Property, that's where it's at. The Ten Commandment model, that's where the prosperity is at. Yeah, I'm running out of time. Remember, this is the Privateer. The Privateer now is the-privateer.com. Got that? The-privateer.com. Make sure you send them an email or something and get a subscription to it. All right, we're running out of time. I've got to remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time is up. We'll have to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.